The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm really excited to have our special guest on today. He is the founding partner of Invictus Capital, Anthony Vecino. Anthony, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. No, pleasure's all ours. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you being on. Pulling back the curtain a little bit, Anthony and I have been just having a blast getting to know each other and chatting a little bit before we hit record. But for those that maybe don't know you and haven't had a chance to visit some of your websites and social links, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you find yourself in these days?
Yeah, so I am based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and my story is just coming out of college, I had no chance of going the corporate route and working for other people because I am just woefully unhirable. I have really bad ADHD, so I was really unfocused, undisciplined. I was getting fired all the time, so I knew coming out of school, I was going to have to find my own path through life where I really had the ultimate say over my schedule and my time. And so that led me down a lot of different entrepreneurial paths. And it's interesting when we talk about real estate and where it intersected, it was like the universe kept trying to get me to go into real estate at different points. And I kept looking at the universe dead in the eye and being like, no, I know better. And so like the first time was in college, my roommate and his dad, they were buying and fixing single family homes. And that's where we were living in these construction zones. And all I learned from that was I can swing a hammer, but I can't hit a nail. Like I hate construction. I'm not good with my hands. It doesn't spark my soul with joy. So my first experience with real estate was actually very negative. And so it was about another decade until the universe put real estate in front of me again, when a buddy, he came to me and he said, "Hey, I'm buying these quads. Do you want to maybe do that together?" And I was again like, no, you know, I was doing something else at the time. I was building a window washing company, which sounds way cooler, right? Like way cooler. Like, no, that's not for me, but I'll passively invest before I even knew what that meant. I was like, I'll give you some money so you can go do it. And so couple years later, again, the universe said, okay, last try, here it comes. And this time I was building a different company. I was living back in Minnesota. And honestly, I don't even know if this is how the universe really put it in front of me, but this is the story I tell. So we're going to go with it. I was driving into downtown Minneapolis, looking up at the skyline, and was hit with the question. For the first time in my life, I wondered who actually owns skyscrapers. Like who owns that? Is that a person? Is it a company? I didn't know. I had no clue. And so just wanting to like dive into discovering the answer to that question led to multifamily, the discovery that all these apartment buildings that you see around you, they're owned by generally people that aren't too different than you and myself. And that became very interesting. So I started learning more about that. And you know, the coolest thing about multifamily real estate that I tell people is that it's just so simple. Once you understand how it works, it's hard, but it's simple. It's not rocket science. Anybody can do it. And so that's what I did is I started with a small triplex. I wanted to learn the systems, build up the competence to do it on a larger scale, and then started scaling from there. And that's where we're at now. We have about 200 units under management up here in the Twin Cities. And we kind of do a hybrid of joint ventures and syndications where we work with passive investors. We like to, as much as possible, in the early days when we were building up our portfolio, we really wanted to use our own money generally. Like we wanted to learn on our own dime. We wanted to take our lumps without having to take other, passive investors' money. So it was really just in the end of 2019 when my partner Dan Krueger and I formed Invictus Capital. And that's the syndication arm of what we do, where we work with passive investors to provide hopefully, exceptional investment opportunities in multifamily without having to deal with any of the things that makes real estate kind of suck.
Right. All the good stuff, not so much the bad stuff. And that's an interesting point. I don't think many of us know or even think about until we're find ourselves either passively investing or actively participating in investing on the multifamily side. Like somebody does own these properties. The tenants don't own it. They're paying rent to somebody. And if inevitably most of us have probably rented a house or an apartment or a condo or a duplex or whatever at some point in time, somebody we were paying money to somebody, and I don't think it ever clicked that this person or the property manager reports to somebody. that they have somebody they're working for. So I think that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah. And when you finally do have that realization, you know, your natural hurdle is, oh, well, it's probably somebody rich. They probably have a ton of money. I don't have a ton of money. it doesn't even matter. And that's, I think, why generally people don't even ever explore the question, is because they just automatically assume, well, even if I knew the answer, it's still going to be out of reach. But that's the thing, is that every deal needs three things. It needs somebody who has the time, somebody who has the experience, and somebody who has the money. And you don't have to be the one that brings all of that to the table. And so you can go and find ways to build out, you know, the experience, or dedicate your time to hustle, and, you know, bring in a capital partner. And that's really an effective way of getting into the game. But it's a light bulb moment when you finally look around and you're like, so I could buy that? That's possible? Oh, okay. Let's try that.
And I think that's an interesting step too, because I think some people just stop at like, oh, that's an interesting thing. Somebody does own that. And then for those that are really interested in real estate and maybe want to learn more, the next thing is, well, how would I go about buying something? I can't afford it myself. If they're not rich, how do they buy it? And then that leads into possible syndication and all that kind of stuff. So that's incredibly interesting. And I don't think I've heard that aspect of how somebody's gotten into real estate. So that's a really cool part of the story. But we, as much success as you've had in your career in real estate and before that, I wouldn't imagine it's always been successful. And that's what we brought you on here, is to uncover some of the things that maybe were bumps or challenges along the way that ultimately you learned from to help make you successful. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, opening up a little bit and letting our audience know one of those or one of your experiences.
Yeah. One of our core values at one of my companies is we fail our way to success. And it's a core tenet of who we are, and the concept that as long as you don't give up, you haven't failed until you give up. It's just, you know, you're just still on the road. And for me, actually, when I finally got bit by the real estate bug and I was like, this is a thing that I want to do, I was going to go into business with my best friend. And, you know, him and I, best friends are an interesting thing, because you're so simpatico, you see things so similarly, and you probably, because of that, you probably have a lot of the same strengths and weaknesses. And that's what the situation that we found ourselves in. We had a quad under contract, and it was going to be our very first deal either of us had ever done. And immediately after putting it under contract, it became clear that there was a lot of friction in the relationship, because we were both trying to pick up the same balls and ignore the same balls, because we were both good at the same thing, is kind of what attracted us to, you know, our friendship in the first place. And compounding that was the fact that we were really good friends, almost like brothers. And so communicating is different. It's interesting because the filters are kind of gone. You can get upset and frustrated with one another and take things personally and emotionally rather than more cool, calm, and collected that you need to have when it comes to business, which is looking at things a little bit more dispassionately sometimes. And so this was all happening as we were leading up to the closing of this property. And we were really excited because it was our first deal, and we're like, next, we're going to do this. And then we're going by the next thing right after. And so it was like the launching off point of this whole thing. And we got to the day before closing. We were supposed to sign the papers the next day, and I pulled the plug. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to forfeit the earnest money. I'll take that out of my side. I was like, this isn't going to work. Like, this is going to be bad for our relationship long term. And this deal is starting to look marginal in my mind when we can't get on the same page. And that was a very difficult decision, because it's kind of like when the rocket is sitting on the launch pad and they're doing the countdown from 10, 9, 8, and then they get to 6 and they're like, nah, scrap it. And it's like, that's a big letdown. And it was a big letdown for my friend, my partner. It took him a long time to recover from that. Like, our relationship really struggled. It was hard for me, because then it was like, it felt like going back to square one and starting all over again. And that was a really hard decision to make. But at the end of the day, the guiding theory for us now is no deal is better than a bad deal. And it can be really hard to recognize a potential bad deal in the moment, but you usually know in your gut, like there's usually something sitting there where you're like, things that start hard end hard. This isn't starting easily. It's maybe a bad sign for the future. So that was my very first foray into real estate. And it was a real dud of a start.
Yeah. Well, we've heard some different folks where they've had some trouble kind of launching off the ground, to use your analogy. And it's interesting that you partnered with your friend. And I do think oftentimes we are attracted to our friends because we have a ton of similarities. When you were looking back and you're beyond that and looking to where you're at today, how did you balance out bringing somebody in that fit you as a person, but balanced out having strengths in other areas? Because that maybe was probably the missing piece for what y'all were looking mm-hmm. at. How did you go about that process, and what did that look like to bring that person on and go mm-hmm. through that?
Partnerships are really tricky. It's like finding, you know, a husband or a wife or any kind of mate. Like, you can't just go into the bar and walk up to the first person you see and be like, hey, you want to get hitched? Like, probably won't work. And if it does, you probably don't want to marry that person. That's probably a bad idea. And so when it comes to building, like finding a partner in business, it's the same thing. You can't just go out there. You can't go to a networking event and just tap everybody on the shoulder and be like, I'm looking for a partner, looking for a partner. Like, and you see this all the time. That's not the way to do it. What you really need to do is, one, sit down and audit your strengths and your weaknesses. It starts with self-awareness. Understand, where are you potentially a great partner and where do you suck? And once you have that, once you understand what it is that you bring to the table and what you need somebody else to bring to the table, the universe has a way of manifesting that. So it's like, I think Rumi, the poet, said something, that which you seek is seeking you. And so once you understand clearly what it is that you need, like for me, I'm not great at the financials, the underwriting. It's not the thing that sparks my soul with joy. So I understood, like, I need somebody who's really good at that, that loves that. My partner, Dan, he comes from a finance background. So he lives in a spreadsheet, but it was only an understanding, like, okay, that's what I need as a partner and not these other things. Because in that first relationship with my buddy, we went into it not knowing what our strengths and weaknesses were. We just looked at all the tasks and been like, said, hey, we can do these. We can all do these. But we never really stopped to ask ourselves, who's accountable to this thing and that thing? And does this make sense? And so, you know, my partnership with Dan, it started at a networking event, but it didn't start with us looking for each other. It just started with us going out there, putting ourselves in the way of, you know, relationships and serendipity, going to this event and just being cool, normal people that struck up a relationship, a conversation. And we both understood what we were looking for. And about 4 or 5 months later, we said, oh, actually, you know, there's a lot of synergy here. Why aren't we working together? We could go so much further and faster if we do this together. And so the relationship really evolved organically. And I think that's important because real estate is a very long, slow thing. And you're building relationships that are going to take you, they're going to span decades. And so when you're new, you're probably like, oh, I just need to get that first deal. I want to get in that first thing. Like you feel that timer on the back of your neck, like you feel it and you want to get in the game, but you have to like pause and find the right moment and not rush it, because you're going to be doing this ideally for the next 10, 20, 30 years. It's not a get rich overnight scheme.
Right. I would imagine too, when you're looking for somebody like that, as you said, I mean, the universe will likely manifest it. The most important part that I kept hearing in your story, though, was the self-awareness piece and being able to understand what you are good at, but maybe more importantly, what you're not good at, mm-hmm. and really honing in on that and being able to understand that you can find somebody to complement those strengths and weaknesses, likely on the adverse side of that. For those that are maybe have a lifelong friend or want to go at it with a friend or somebody they know incredibly well or for a long time, family, friend, whatever it may be, what would be your recommendation if they're going to go down that road and feel like that maybe they can do it? Any thoughts or recommendations on what they maybe want to look out for or try or do if they are mm-hmm. going down that route?
Yeah. You know, like there's nothing wrong necessarily with doing business with friends and family. Like one of my other businesses is with a very dear, close friend. And the reason that one's worked out better in the end was like the skills and the abilities were a better complement. But we also walked into it with two things from the beginning that I think are critical. One is clear accountabilities. You need to understand who's doing what, who's accountable to that at the end of the day, because what ends up happening a lot of times with friendships and family is like you have all these things that need to get done. And it's kind of like this wibbly wobbly mess of like, oh, I'll pick this up and do this. And then you go do that thing, but it's, and then maybe we'll switch. And there's never this clear accountability and what that means to hold somebody accountable. Like it's, if you have a friendship and you've never had to hold each other accountable before, then it's going to be strange. And so clearly communicating both during the process of like, okay, what does it mean to hold each other accountable? What are the consequences? How do we actually do that? But then also communicating like, hey, when are things going well? When are things going poorly? So start with accountability and work on clear communication. If you get those two things figured out, then chances are you can do pretty well. But also don't just ignore the elephant in the room. That's the biggest thing. And this is what happens with friends and family more often than not, is you just you get frustrated, you go home, you tell your spouse about it, and you're like, oh, so-and-so is a jerk. I hate him. Like, they're just not getting it. And then you never air that. You never have that conversation productively. And that's when things start gnawing away and become very necrotic. So avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, don't sweep it under the rug. Go ahead and get it. And if, back to your point around communication, if you have clear lines of communication, that should be something that you could bring up effectively and making sure that everyone's on the same page and that you're getting it out there so it doesn't get swept under the rug and fester up later when more stressful times come. So, Well, Anthony, I think that's as good enough a spot as ever to kind of wrap up, because that's incredibly helpful. I think definitely for me and hopefully our audience. For those that maybe want to work with you, they want to learn more about you, want to learn more about your success and how you got there, where's the best place for folks to find you and find more information about you?
Yeah, you can come find us at InvictusMultifamily.com if you want to learn more about what we do on the real estate passive investing side. We have a book coming out in August called Passive Investing Made Simple, which is just designed to help shed some light on this thing that's kind of esoteric to a lot of people. And it's a little overwhelming, which is, how do I passively invest in an apartment building? It's, in my mind, one of the best investment vehicles out there, but there's just not a lot of information. So it can feel a little daunting and overwhelming. So I'd say check that out. It comes out in August. And you can find me on social media. A lot of my social media on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, I'm not talking so much about my successes as I am about my failures, because those are a lot of the times where the learning opportunities came from. So if you're interested in seeing me fail my way to success, like, go check those out.
Perfect. Well, hey, it sounds like we picked the right candidate to have on today. But seriously, Anthony, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate the experience and sharing all the stories and what brought you to the table. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.